This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
As you're sitting around nursing your post-Good Friday hangover, we are going to give you some little treats. It's all googie eggs, fish, and a little wine today as we unpack what should be on your table for Easter. Some interesting stories today about fishermen and seafood. We will talk chocolate, of course, and get you a glass of vino. Good afternoon, 6:30 past one. I should not mention that you've got a Good Friday, a hangover from Good Friday. I'm sure you were all very well behaved, eating your fish and your prawns and your things. Interesting, I had a little discussion with somebody. The Christians don't like us gay people sleeping together, which is really interesting because in their same book, it also says that they can't eat the prawns and the crabs and the lobsters and the crayfish and all that. So there's a lot of hypocrisy going on in that little part of the world, but we'll come to that at another time. We are going to meet today a guy by the name of John Sussman. He is from Sydney, and he is the most excited man there is to know in the world about seafood. We're going to talk about some changes to fishing licenses, commercial fishing licenses in Port Phillip Bay. The ridiculous millions of tons of seafood that was purchased yesterday just at the Sydney Fish Market alone. They were working from 2 o'clock in the morning. All a bit crazy if you ask me. So we're going to toss a bit of seafood around with John. We're also going to speak with Kim Chalmers. She is from the Chalmers Wine Group. Pioneers of alternative varieties, and she might give you some choices of something different you can pop on the table tomorrow if in fact you are going to do something besides stuff your face with chocolate. Speaking of chocolate, Darren Purchase from the Birch and Purchase Sweet Studio in South Yarra will join us as well. We'll talk about chocolate and the insanity that is Easter for he and his team, because let me assure you, the only longer queue in Melbourne at the moment that's not at Birch and Purchase is across the road here at Tim Ho Wan, the new dumpling place that has opened in Bourke Street, where there are people queuing for hours to eat dumplings. We're going to talk to those guys in a couple of weeks as well.
Hi, I'm Manny Fellel, and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed you are. We're celebrating one of the two festivals of gluttony in the Christian church, one being Christmas, the other, of course, being Easter, where chocolate is quite frequently on the menu, many other things as well, those crazy hot cross buns and those crazy kids putting chocolate in them. What is that all about? Somebody who might know not a lot about hot cross buns, but knows all about the seafood that you probably ate yesterday and you're probably going to finish off tomorrow. He joins me on the phone from Sydney, I believe, unless he's lounging on a beach somewhere, which would not be surprising. John Sussman, good afternoon.
G'day, Pete. How are you going,
mate? Are you lounging on a beach, or are you, in fact, busy?
Just about to, actually. Just about to. Managed to sort of, you know, skip out of work early today, and I'm heading for the beach, indeed.
Excellent. Big story yesterday on the ABC, of course, 5.5 million tonnes of seafood sold at the Sydney Fish Market. That's an insane amount of food.
Yeah, look, it is. It, as you said before, it's the sort of second biggest sort of period of the year for seafood sales, and it's pretty amazing. I was down there sort of amongst the scrum yesterday, and it was, yeah, it's just amazing how you sort of look at people thinking, well, is there any other time to eat seafood? Well, of course there is, and why not have a go outside of, you know, Christmas and Easter?
Well, every day of the week is a good time to eat seafood.
Absolutely.
And what's I'm just going to touch on the seasonality thing because I know it's a thing for you. What if we are in Melbourne, for example, and we want to go and buy a whole fish to cook for lunch or something to pop on the table tomorrow when we have those dastard relatives over? What's right at this time of year?
Look, this is a great time of the year, Pete. It's the sort of the changing of the seasons, and you know we really do see a different whole range of species that are coming through. You know, our warmer water fish are sort of starting to head back up north again, and our southern water fish are starting to come through. So, down there in Victoria, where you have consistent supplies out of both the east coast and the west coast of you know things like snapper and flathead and gummy shark. There's also some other really good fish that start to come through at this time of the year, like Miradori and Warahau and Grenadier. They start to really come into their own in sort of autumn, winter and spring. Mm-hmm. So there's plenty of choice out there. And, you know, the winter fish are always a little bit more fat than the summer fish. And of course, like anything else, fat is flavour.
Indeed it is. And you'd have been very proud of me yesterday, mate. I made I had a couple of people for lunch, 12 of us, I think, in the end, with a seafood pie that contained some beautiful mussels. They may or may not have been Kinkawooka mussels from Port Lincoln. I can't get better mussels. Also some beautiful fresh fish and some prawns. A lovely Australian prawn meat in this nice big rich fish pie. I'm not a religious person, but some of my guests were, so I thought I'd better do the right thing.
There you go. That's great. No, it is. Look, it is a fantastic time, and you just touched on mussels. Well, of course, winter is the mussel is the peak mussel season, and you know they are really magnificent during their first sort of when they haven't spawned the virgin mussels, if you will, and they're you know small, soft, and sweet, and that's just an absolutely knockout for coming into the cooler weather.
And people don't realise this. They seem to think this is a summer food, but oysters are at their best in winter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there are some spectacular oysters through the winter months, through the cooler months, because they have a much higher what we call glycogen or body fat level, and that's where the sweetness and depth of flavour is. So winter is absolutely perfect for oysters. And particularly given the tragedy that's occurring in Tasmania at the moment where there's been some significant losses due to a particular virus that affects oysters. Treasure them. If you can get your hands on good oysters, just really recognise that they're a luxury item.
And also the native Australian oyster. I had some Angazis recently.
And native flat oyster, yeah. They're a little. You have to hunt for those to find them, or if you've got a restaurant buddy, maybe ask them to ask one of their fish suppliers.
Yes.
They're not as prevalent at retail, but they're really unique. They are... I call them the venison of the oyster world. They're kind of fairly funky. They've got a really deep, rich flavour and certainly a much you know, sort of crisper texture than either the Pacific or the Rock. But they, if you can find them, they're definitely worth having a go. And they're worth having a go with like a chilled Pinot rather than the traditional champagne or Sancerre or whatever. Mm, yeah,
indeed. So
it's great.
John Susselman is my guest. There is no man in Australia that knows more about fish and seafood than this man. And look, mate, a bit of a story from today's age, or a couple of days ago, yeah. I should say. End of the line for more than 30 commercial fishermen in Port Phillip Bay. The government has made a decision to cease commercial fishing licences in the bay because it's believed to be going to be better for recreational fishers and beginner anglers. What's your take on that?
Tough one. I mean, trying to sort of measure the demand for all of us to eat seafood and those against one particular segment of the community, as in sort of recreational fishers, it's a tough discussion. You know, they're public waters, and whose rights are they to actually use them or fish them? The legislation that's being passed down in the Victorian state government is fairly brutal, but it should be you know sort of remembered that. It's only putting a ban on netting. So there's still diving and hand lining and hook and line fisheries that will be operating. But, of course, the predominant species that you've been lucky enough to have on your back doorstep there in things like flathead and squid and King George Whiting, to name just a few, they'll become scarcer. And, of course, that'll put the price up.
It means they'll be more expensive, yes.
And it'll be more expensive. I think, look, it's definitely a fairly bold move. It was supported by both parties down there, so there wasn't too much that the unfortunately the commercial fishermen could do about it. And I really hope that, you know, that I can still see some of those local fish that you get in your local waters on restaurant plates and indeed in fish shops, you know, in the future. It's a very tough one.
You talked about the sort of hand lining and non-netting, basically, any other form of fishing outside of netting, which means that they're still going to be available, but obviously the labour to fish them becomes more intensive, and therefore we have a higher cost. There's also some fishermen or some families, and there have been generational fishing families in the bay, they will be constant compensated for the licences, some of them up to...
That's correct. They've been bought back. So variously, the value of the licence is equated to what the historical catch of that fisherman's annual harvest. So, look, and again, that is a fairly difficult one. There's a lot of emotion surrounding the whole discussion. The buyback scheme has you know, been active across a number of fisheries, not only in Victoria but around the country, as fleets are managed more significantly to, you know, obviously sort of manage total catch. The interesting point about it all, Pete, is that we're a 75% net importer of seafood, which means that 3 out of 4 seafood mills that we have are of imports, which means that what we actually do catch or grow here in Australia is really special. And I'd like to see a bit of a renaissance of appreciation for just how special our local wild fish is in particular.
Well, we tend to take it for granted, don't we?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We do take it for granted. And you sort of, you know, people think it's expensive, but look, I was in a butcher shop this morning and I was staggered at the price of beef. And I thought, well, you know, so often we get tarred with the brush of being the most expensive protein, but I really don't think...
Have you tried to buy a leg of lamb of late?
Exactly. So, the onus is on all of us to try and sort of support our local fishers, whatever that species might be. And so rather than necessarily always just hunting straight for the snapper, the King George Whiting or the flathead, we could try some of those lesser-known, lesser-used species. I mean, there's been a massive run of blue mackerel on the East Coast over the last sort of month and a half. And this is often goes by the unfortunate name of a slimy mackerel, but it's really delicious. It's literally cheap as chips, and it just staggers me that it's not sort of everywhere, that it's not on every person's dinner table.
So what is there, apart from the slimy mackerel, that is in abundance that we should be looking for? We should be asking our chefs to put onto the restaurant plate. We should be asking our fishmonger to get for us at our local fish store.
That's right. I mean, things like the red spot whiting, which is, you know, the very much maligned, you know, cousin of the famous King George. Mm-hmm. But it's a delicious, you know, firm-grained, sweet, white-fleshed fish. A little fiddlier than the larger King George, but the just as delicious and very sustainable and, you know, sort of what we would again term as underutilized. Leather jacket's another one. Now, that's, you know, one of the most versatile and delicious fish you could find. It's got a dense, clean, white, mild flesh that can be, you know,
used for anything.
Grilled, stir-fried,
Made into Thai fish cakes.
Absolutely. Mm. So, you know, there's plenty of options out there. Redfish is another, or sometimes goes by the name of Nanagai. Prevalent and cheap. Boarfish is another one, or duckbill as it's sometimes called in Victoria. So there's plenty of options out there, and it is a function of all of us just sort of saying, well, even though I haven't heard of it before, I'm going to give it a try. And ask your fishmonger what it's like, you know, for those that don't like really strongly flavoured fish that are looking for a more mild flavour, there's plenty of those as well.
And I guess there's also the option to ask your fishmonger, how should I cook this? Can I wrap this in foil with some lemon and put it on the barbecue, or does it go in the oven, or is it something I should grill in the pan, or do I make a little beer batter and fry it? I mean, fishmongers are there to help us. Like the butcher, we ask the butcher, how should I cook this piece of venison? We should be asking our fishmongers, what is the best way for me to consume this?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like the other aspect that we should consider is nose to scale eating of fish. So, you know, nose to tail has been prevalent in the pork world for ages, of course. But, you know, nose to scale, as we like to call it, where you look at the wings and you look at the cheeks and you can even look at the heads and the frames of the fish and see what you can render out of those in terms of a meal or part of a meal. And, you know, that's really where we need to start to think seriously about how much of the fish we can actually eat, not just the sort of centre cut premium loin.
Well, we know that similarly to pork skin, the best part of the fish, if it's treated correctly, is quite often the skin, where it can be dried out in between a couple of flat trays in the oven. So you take the skin off and it's crispy and a little bit of, you can now go and buy vinegar powder at a couple of stores here in Melbourne. So a little bit of rock salt, some vinegar powder and that on some crispy fish skin. And my God, there's an afternoon with a couple of cold beers.
Oh, look, absolutely. In fact, I was out visiting one of our Vietnamese customers the other day, and we were sitting down actually having a cold beer and this most delicious snack, which I had just presumed was pork crackling, actually. But it was actually the salted, dried and fried swim bladder of barramundi.
Oh, yum.
And it was absolutely delicious. I mean, you know, you could swear that it was pork crackling. And, you know, it just sort of struck me, well, hang on, look, how many thousands of those get thrown out every day as the, you know, sort of the commercial processes are processing barramundi? And that's definitely part of the whole discussion now.
Mm. And we used to throw out the heads of the pigs and we used to throw out the pork belly a very long time ago. So, you know, we've seen the resurgence. Can you eat the scales? I've actually got in my head that I've had fish scales that have been sort of, you know, dropped into a very hot fryer. They
That's
puff
right.
up and, again, a bit of salt and vinegar powder and off you go.
Yeah. The caveat on that is that they have to be very fresh fish because, obviously, the scales protect the skin, but it also holds, you know, that sort of natural fish slime that the fish has to protect it from you know, losing all of its body you know, when it's in the water. But as a result, they tend to oxidise quite quickly, so it needs to be a very fresh fish. But it's a very popular technique in Japanese cooking in particular, where they'll pour, you know, boiling sesame oil sort of against the grain of the scales, and they just curl up and crisp up, and they're absolutely knockout delicious.
I'm going to let you go and have a cold beer. It's always good to talk to you, mate.
Thanks, Pete.
And have a very happy Easter.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
That's John Sussman from Fish Heads. He is, like I said, a man with a font of all knowledge when it comes to things as seafood. It's always a good chance to catch up with him and say g'day. And he's right. Go and ask your fishmonger. Go and find out a little bit more. Don't be scared about cooking fish. It is one of life's great joys, is to be able to cook yourself a piece of fish or some fish in whatever way that you want to do it, some seafood. Make sure what you're eating, of course, is in season. You are here on Cravings here on Joy 94.9, and we'll return shortly and talk all things sugary and sweet with the very lovely Darren Purchase from the Birch and Purchase Sweet Studio. It's 28 minutes past one.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9, and that French man would know a little bit about chocolate. Somebody else that knows a little bit about chocolate, he's going to join me any second on the telephone, is Darren Purchase. He is from the Birch and Purchase Sweet Studio. And as I mentioned a bit earlier, I reckon they've got the biggest queue in Melbourne outside of Tim Ho Wan here in Bourke Street. So let's just check. Darren, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
Excellent. Are they queuing at the door?
It's been pretty full on this morning. It's fantastic. Everyone's buying up eggs and in a great mood, so looking forward to a great long weekend.
What's the big seller at the studio?
Well, obviously, all the chocolate products, all the Easter eggs. We've got an Easter egg that's called the Cuban, and it's 70% single-origin dark chocolate, and that's just gone nuts.
Oh,
as well as some of our sort of figurines. They're always popular. So, and now we're moving into the afternoon. People are buying up sort of desserts for the next couple of days. So, yeah, it's great. I love it.
Are people steering away from the traditional grab a couple of eggs on, you know, from the service station on the way to Nanny's, or and getting into it? It seems becoming a bigger celebration every year.
Yeah, it does. It's certainly getting bigger for my business every year. And we have a point of difference where, you know, everything's sort of handmade at the shop, and it's all sort of, we use, you know, nice ingredients, and we do a different. We do like chocolate figurines instead of eggs. We also do eggs, but we kind of do some different stuff. And people, I think, are really attracted to that. And we change our range every year, so they get really excited when we release it. And they, you know, they want to know what new stuff we're doing. So, yeah, it seems like our customers seem like they're quite satisfied with the range.
Yeah, that's good. I like this idea of moving away from sort of some of that old traditional stuff and getting into something that's new and modern, because it's really, we shouldn't be celebrating it at all, quite frankly, if we look at the religious significance of this particular day that is tomorrow and yesterday. I also need to gather your thoughts, Darren, on whether one should actually put chocolate chips into a hot cross bun.
Everyone's, you know, I make so many hot cross buns here, but I do a traditional bun. The only difference is I paint my cross on in a little bit of an artistic paintbrush swipe. But I toyed with the idea of putting chocolate in it because chocolate's in everything in my shop. There's two camps. There's the ones that want the chocolate because that's what I'm known for, and there's the other camp that's like, don't mess with my hot cross bun. So we've just done traditional ones this year, and it makes the shop smell great. I kind of give them out to customers who are spending a lot of money. It's kind of like a goodwill thing, and so it's not. I'm not like Tivoli Road Bakery. I'm not doing 2,000 a day, but it's good. It's the start of Easter for us, and it just everyone's in a good mood when they see an Easter bun.
Correct. Now, I ran into Philippa Grogan this morning, who was out doing the last of her deliveries before she takes off for Tassie for Easter break. Do you get a break after today is finished and get time to put your feet up for a couple of days?
Are you crazy? No way. I don't get a break. It's been a full-on sort of couple of months. You know, we did Fashion Festival at the Grand Prix and
Melbourne Food and Wine.
I've got a day off with Kath tomorrow, and we're looking forward to relaxed in, but we're back on it Monday, and we're just gearing up. We've got lots of events coming up, and you know I don't stop. So
yeah, I know you don't stop. Do you slow down though?
You got to do it while you can, you know. If I'm not doing it, someone else is going to be doing it, and I don't want to be standing around twiddling my thumbs. I'm grateful to be busy all the time.
Well, it's a good thing to be busy. Is there a quieter time of the year where you can jump on a plane and head overseas and have a look at what's happening in your industry on the other side of the world, have a look at what's happening in Belgium and Europe?
That is important to get out and about and see what's going on. I guess, probably June, July would be our quietest month. I'm just trying to think of the events we've got on there. There's not much happening. Because then after that, obviously, we're gearing up for, madness again. But that would probably be the time. And that may be the time that I should be whisking Kath away and, looking after her a bit.
Well, you've got to look after yourself also, because you guys work so hard that there's got to be you've got to allow yourself some downtime, and one day is not enough to allow your body and your mind in particular to recuperate.
Yeah, I know.
A fellow workaholic giving you advice. It's all okay.
Yeah, it's so hard. When it's your own business, and I'm here all the time, so it is hard. But you do need to find a balance. Hopefully, this time next year, I can. I'll be in a. Every year, I'm trying to be in a better position, business wise and personally, so that that's why I work so hard. I'm always trying to improve, and yeah, I need to take Kath away for a break for sure.
Yes, because she also works very hard as your right hand woman.
She does. She's amazing. She's down there now, just selling eggs. So she's, can I put that in a gift box for you? Can I wrap that? Can I do that? And, she's filling up. She's doing all sorts. So we're just running around today. But there's a really good vibe. Everyone still seems sort of genuinely really happy that they're going to be spending time with their family. And, I love it. It's a great time of year, not just because I'm selling lots of eggs.
Yes.
It's a good time of year.
Darren Purchase is my guest from the Bertram Purchase B&P Suite Studio in South Yarra. Mate, what's on the table for you when you do take a break tomorrow? Do you cook? Do you both cook up a bit of a storm? Because Kath's a brilliant cook as well.
I said to Kath, tomorrow morning we're gonna wake up early because we'll be used to it. I said, we're going to go downstairs, we're going to open a bottle of champagne, have a glass, pop the lamb in the oven, go back to bed for 9 hours. and that'll be it. Yeah, I'll get up later when the lamb's done.
How are you cooking the lamb for 9 hours?
I'm just doing a shoulder, and I'm doing it really low, and I'm just chucking it in with loads of herbs and a bit of stock and some vinegar and stuff. And
I'm assuming you'll drink the champagne as this all unfolds?
Yes. Yeah, we're going to have a glass tomorrow. It's kind of, we raise a glass after we've achieved some milestones. And the Grand Prix was obviously huge, and it all rolled into Easter. So We're looking forward to spending some time with each other tomorrow. But then we're gearing up for our fifth birthday, which is on...
5 years? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I think it's around about the 17th of April. So we're planning lots of really cool stuff for that. We're going to get a DJ in the shop. We're going to have a whole birthday week of sort of giveaways, competitions, and just generally celebrate being around for 5 years. Which
I expect my invitation is already in the mail.
For sure. No worries. First name on the list.
Excellent. I can't believe it's been 5 years. Are you where you thought you would be 5 years down the track, or are you surprised by how successful it has been?
I'm grateful that it's been very popular. I knew it would be a lot of work. I guess I didn't realise how much hard work was involved. But I'm pleased that we've got a loyal sort of customer base. I'm pleased that my product is sort of, it's still got its integrity. I'm in the shop every day. I'm making sure my product's really good. So I haven't kind of opened 10 pastry shops and I'm diluting everything. I want to keep it really special.
Your name's not Zumbo then.
Anyone who runs multiple businesses needs applauding, I think, because it's so tough. But I just want to make sure that my product doesn't get diluted and it's unique and it's something special. And, I'll have to do something else another one day. But for now, BNP will just be in Melbourne. But, yeah, we'll look to do something different.
Well, I'm sure there's opportunities for pop-ups and all sorts of things down the track to keep that creative mind of yours actively engaged. Mate, it's always good to talk to you. Happy Easter to both you and Kath, and I hope the queues continue out the door for some hours.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it, and happy Easter to you and to all the Joy listeners.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
Here we are. We're back again. Cravings here on Joy 94.9. It's 14 minutes to 2. I cannot believe we have gotten through this program so well already, given the state of my brain. That was the lovely Darren Purchase talking to us about chocolate just before we went to that piece of music, which was, of course, Sharon Wolf with Sweet Like Chocolate. Earlier in the hour, you've also heard from Sly and the Family Stone, which is, of course, disco classic, everyday people. I love a disco classic, and I love an alternative varietal when it comes to a glass of wine. Somebody who knows more about that, I think, than any other woman in the country is the ever-delightful Kim Chalmers. Good afternoon.
Hello. How are you, Pete?
Good, good. Now, you're doing a tasting somewhere. Where are you?
I am. We're at Stefano's Cafe in Mildura, where they've got a fantastic little boutique wine cellar selection, and we're doing... Chalmers and Montevecchio wine tasting all day today and helping them promote their brand new wine club.
A shame I'm not there. How is the weather in our fair town?
Oh, beautiful as always. Clear blue sky, crisp morning, perfect camping weather.
Yeah, lovely. And here's me looking out the window here in Bourke Street to a grey sky and wondering what's happening at the MCG. Hey, tomorrow people are going to be consuming all sorts of lovely things. I'm going to start with seafood because I think there's some really good options there. What's good to drink seafood-wise tomorrow?
Well, what we're getting excited about at the moment is Greco. Greco is a great variety out of Campania. It's one of the sort of lesser-known alternative varietals, I suppose. The go-to... classic wine from our range would be Vermentino, which we call it our fish and chip wine, and it's, you know, as you know, it's been a stalwart for years. But Greco's just a bit fun at the moment. It's got a bit more body to it, but is still really crisp and fresh. So it'll go with anything from your very lean kind of, you know, white bait with lemon, salty kind of flavours, right through to maybe, you know, something with a beurre blanc or a bit more of a rich sauce. So that's something, one out of the bag. There's not too many Greco producers in Australia.
I was about to say, how many people are producing it?
There's 3 or 4 branded ones that I know of. But, yeah, it's on the up. It's on the up. So that's a fun one to look out for, but one that's probably easier to find, Vermentino, easy.
And we are making great Vermentinos in this country. There's no question about that.
We are.
What about Fiano? Do we need to drink a Fiano with something that's a bit more meaty and bold?
Yeah, chicken, or if you're having, you know, a pasta dish with ricotta or pumpkin and things like that, I think Fiano, you know, nuts, burnt butter kind of sauces and things like that. Fiano's a little bit, I suppose, the Chardonnay of the Italian variety range, not to compare apples and pears, but it's got a bit more roundness, a bit more texture and body, and, yeah, absolutely delightful with those kinds of dishes as well.
I was just talking to Darren Purchase, and he's cooking a 9-hour slow-cooked shoulder of lamb tomorrow. What should he be going and buying at the bottle store to have with said slow-cooked shoulder of lamb?
Slow-cooked shoulder of lamb. Sagrantino, perhaps. Something with a bit of tannin to cut through that lamb fat that we all... That classic Aussie flavour, isn't it? That kind of the smell of cooking lamb. But what you need, really, when you've got something with that kind of fat content is something with a bit of acidity and a bit of tannin, and Sagrantino is the wine for you in that regard. Sagrantino is a variety from Umbria, which is one of the most, or if not the most, tannic varieties in the world. So it has a lot of drying tannins in the skins and the seeds. So it ends up making quite a bold wine that pairs beautifully with anything with a bit of fat to it, roast pork, lamb, all those kinds of dishes.
Umbria, the boot, the heel of the boot of Italy?
No. Umbria is inland from Tuscany. So
right.
central Italy.
What's the heel of the boot?
And Puglia.
Excuse me. There we go. Now, I'm going to work backwards on this one. I've got a couple of bottles of Aglianico. What am I drinking with the Aglianico? Which I did quite enjoy at the World's Longest Lunch, by the way.
Yes. It's a wonderful wine. What I love about that wine is that it's really complex and interesting without being heavy. It's so light on its feet, it's really delicate. So I would love to pair that with something like wild mushroom or truffle pasta or a duck dish or game, something that's not too overpowering, because it is a delicate wine, but it has plenty of structure to go with, you know, a fattier dish like duck or something like that. Absolutely.
Is it similar in the food comparison to a Pinot Noir? So is some of the stuff you would have with a Pinot, you have with an Aglianico?
Yes, absolutely. Well, with our Aglianico, because our Aglianico is made in quite a delicate way, you'll find a lot of the Italian ones are bolder and a bit more, you know, full-bodied and riper than our particular version. We like to keep our reds quite restrained and elegant. You know, we've got a great reputation in Australia and plenty of producers who make amazing, big, bold wines. So we want to set ourselves aside. And so our style is a bit more light on its feet, which I find is nice for pairing with food as well. So, but today we've had a bit of a hit with our tasting here. Stefano's Cafe and Bakery makes, I think, the best hot cross buns in the world. And our Montevecchio
Nice plug. Well done.
Our Montevecchio Moscato has been going down an absolute treat. There was a few bleary-eyed breakfast goers this morning who didn't think they were going to be able to manage a wine tasting, but were quite happily having a glass of Moscato with their hot cross bun. So there we go.
Ooh, I had to have a cup of tea with my hot cross bun, Kim, because I was not as well as I could have been this morning. Kim Chalmers is my guest. She is from Chalmers Wines, originally from Mildura, then now making wines in Heathcote as well. And pioneers of the alternative variety in Australia. I was having a discussion yesterday because I have a little obsession with Saparavi. And I was talking to a wine-loving friend of mine who was like, what is Saparavi? There's three or four of them being done quite well here in Australia. It's a Georgian wine. Is there at some point going to be a Chalmers Saparavi?
Funnily enough, we did grow Saparavi in the early 2000s, back in the day when we had the original nursery. We had, you know, over 70 different grape varieties in our vineyard, and we had a bit of a play with it. It's an interesting grape, but we've had to restrain ourselves because we do love a project and an experiment, and we've set ourselves a bit of a boundary by saying we'll only do Italian. Mind you, we still have 35 varieties in our vineyard, and it's just imported another brand new 11 into the country, which includes things like Falanghina, Pietro Rosso, Ribolla Gialla, Verdicchio varieties, which many of them have not been in Australia before. So ever-expanding horizons, but not into Saparavi.
Okay. So what's coming next? We've talked about some of the well-known ones. What are the, obviously, the ones you've just mentioned that you've just imported, but what's sort of almost ready to be bottled and something exciting that we can expect from the Charmer's name?
Look, we have just last year released a Sagrantino Appassimento, which is a very special wine, and you'll love this story because it ties in the history of our district here in Mildura. But it's basically, a Pasito is a dessert wine where the grapes are partially dried before the wine is made, so the sugars are concentrated by drying, so you kind of create sultanas and then make wine from it. It's a very simplified version. So we handpicked 6 tonnes of Sagrantino grapes, laid them all out on the beautiful old heritage racks in Merbein, dried them the proper good old-fashioned way in the natural sun, no chemicals required, 3 weeks of drying, dried it half the weight, and then made the wine from it. And it makes a dessert style, but without it having to be fortified. So it's a great option for a cheese plate or a dessert.
Yum.
It makes a, because of the raisin flavours, it makes a really delicious, you know, wine with similar kind of flavour profile support, but much fresher because it's not fortified and it's only 13.5% alcohol. So a really interesting product. There's been producers in Australia like Pizzini making wines by this method for a number of years, but not many red ones and certainly not a Sagrantino one before. So that's something a bit interesting.
Give us the website because we need to go online and order some of that this minute.
CharmersWine.com.au, CHALMERS, CharmersWine.com.au, and you can get all those bits and pieces directly delivered to your door.
Marvellous. Kim, always a delight to talk to you. Give my love to Bart and to Neil and families, and we'll catch up soon.
Will do. Have a happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you all as well. That's Kim Chalmers from Chalmers Wines, the pioneers of the alternative varieties here. Oh, excuse me, in Australia. I've had a little tickle in my throat just thinking about a glass of that delicious wine with a nice big lump of cheese, which most likely looks like my afternoon. It's almost 2:04. Very shortly, the Escape Pod are going to take you travelling with Tracy. There you go. There's some alliteration going nuts there. Travelling with Tracy. Think cruises and driving holidays through Europe and the United States. I think it's a good start. We're going to have a couple of brief interlude, and I'll return to wrap this baby up. It is 2:04. You're on Cravings on Australia's favourite gay and lesbian radio station. Only, in fact, Joy 94.9.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
It is 3 minutes left of the program. I'm delighted to say thank you to my guest, to Kim Chalmers from Chalmers Wines. They're doing a tasting in Mildura at present. If you're in the local area and you're listening via the Joy app, do pop down to Stefano's and get a taste of that lovely Montevecchio wine, which you were talking about, which is going really, really well with a hot cross bun. So the perfect thing to be eating on Easter Saturday. Thank you also to Darren Purchase at the B&P Suite Studio. I'm sure that many of you are familiar with his fine work. Pop in and get your eggs or a nice little dessert for the Easter table tomorrow. And to John Sussman from Fish Heads, giving us the lowdown on commercial fishing in Port Phillip and the right sort of fish to be eating at this time of year. Some of you might think it was a bit late. We should have been eating the fish yesterday, but yeah, eat it all weekend. It's good for you. And we have loads of it if you buy the right stuff. Thank you to Dean Beck for Word for Word and the team from Saturday Magazine, Jake Smethurst for the news. I shall return next week. We are having an Italian episode next week. So think all things Italian. We'll be talking the Italian Food and Wine Festival. We'll be talking about Veneziano coffee and all sorts of delicious Italian things. And, of course, some gelato from the finest gelato makers in the state, at Peter Pippo. I'm going to leave you with a little bit of music while the Escape Pod people shuffle in and take you travelling with Tracy. It's been a delight to have your company. It's coming up to 2:00. My name is Pete Dillon, and this has been Cravings. Have a very lovely afternoon.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.